The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.
Now, a book I have in front of me, Eat the Ones You Love, is the latest from Irish author Sarah Maria Griffin. It's a twisted and tangled story about possession, monstrosity and working in retail. Fans are calling it a modern spin on Little Shop of Horrors. The award-winning author Laura Stevens hails it as a masterpiece, inventive, intimate and so incisive on the way class shapes human relationships. Sarah Rhys Brennan, a New York Times bestselling author, praises the Griffin as an artist of the rarest kind, genuine, vulnerable, funny, tragic and wise. And the aforementioned Sarah Maria Griffin is with me now. Good morning and welcome.
Good morning, Pat. Thank you so much for having me.
It's a hard book to kind of describe to our listeners. It's a very compelling book. I suppose I could call it an ode to the shopping mall as a beginning.
It is, yes. It's set in a fictionalised shopping centre in Dublin 5 and it's based quite tightly on various shopping centres I worked in myself throughout my life.
Okay, the various ones you've worked in?
I worked in the Omni, selling pets. I worked in Dunamead for 5 years, selling video games. I worked in Dundrum very briefly, selling children's shoes.
Okay, and you thought this experience I have of retail should not go to waste. Being an author, nothing goes to waste.
No, and those are just the shopping centres in Dublin that I worked in. I worked retail for over 10 years in different shapes and forms, and I had some terrible days and some tremendous days, and I met some of the best people I've ever known in my life working behind the counter of a shop. So now, I wanted to immortalise it.
What were the circumstances that had you working in retail? I mean, you are, I suppose, a literary author rather than, you know, a pop author.
Maybe that's one way of putting it. Yes,
you're a poet as well.
I do come from poetry. That's my background. Yes, I worked in shops all the way from my teens up through my 20s. And for me, working in retail and working as a nanny and all the different jobs that I did enabled me at night to sit down at a manuscript or sit down at a piece of paper. They gave me enough money to get through the day so that in the evening I had enough space in my head to make the work at the time.
Okay. And your reflections then on the people who work in retail? I mean, we'll talk about the particular retail in this book, which is slightly different to maybe behind the till at Centra.
Yeah, slightly. So this book is set in a florist's. So I myself was working freelance for a long time and decided in 2019 that I was going to retrain and get a proper skill, a different skill in the world. So I went and trained as a florist. And I really enjoyed it. It's complicated, lovely work. And florists meet people at every point in their lives and in their days. You know, you give people flowers when they have a baby. You give them flowers at weddings, at funerals. They're a real mainstay in the community. And they're a shop in the shopping centre. They're a shop in the village. So I was very excited to get back behind the counter of a shop and then got my qualification in a month I think we all remember, which was March 2020.
And then
everything changed.
Now, what I learned from this book about the work of a florist is that it's quite sophisticated. I mean, you get the plants, they may be delivered, or the flowers are delivered every day.
Yep, early in the morning.
Early morning. And then there are tricks that the florist has to keep them perky.
Yes, yes.
And sometimes you get early deliveries and the flowers are not ready to be sold until they begin to show their true colours.
Yeah, absolutely. When the flowers come in the morning from the Netherlands, often on these big vans, they have to be handled very delicately. They're already dead when you're selling them. You know, you do have to give them the illusion of still having life in them. So the way that florists operate is really, really delicate, because if you snap a stem, if you pull the wrong petal, you can destroy the object really quickly. It's a really incredible line of work, a really delicate line of work.
And things that you have to do, for instance, thorny roses, you might blunt them. You might snip off the actual point of the thorn.
But you have to be very careful in case you leave a wound open on the stem. So you want to, there's a particular instrument that you can use to remove the thorns. Or if a set of roses are bound too tight in buds, you can leave some bananas in the bottom of their bucket, which will make them bloom faster. So there's lots of strange little, like the gas that the bananas emit makes the flowers ripen really quickly. So there's lots of delightful little tricks of the trade.
There's chemistry as well.
A lot of chemistry and a lot of like day-to-day science, yes.
Yeah. Mind you, if you have bananas and you put them in your fruit bowl beside citrus fruits, oranges and so on,
They go really quickly.
It's a two-way street with bananas. Now, let's talk about your characters because, as I say, we could talk about the plot, but I don't want to give too much away because it is an unfolding plot. And when I say unfolding, I'm thinking of vines.
Yes, lots of vines. And Yeah, other things that grow and go wrong.
So it took me a couple of chapters to kind of get into the idea of our narrator. Explain.
So with this book in particular, the books that I've written in the past, I've touched on and used monsters in and around the real life situations that I'm depicting. But with this story, I decided, and I don't think this is a spoiler because you find out very quickly, that the story should be told from the perspective of the monster. So the story is set in a fictionalized shopping centre, which borrows a little bit from Dunamead, at the heart of which lives a plant whose name is Baby, and he is the storyteller.
He is the storyteller. Now, he is an extraordinary plant because literally his tentacles go everywhere.
Yes, he grows right into the bottom of the shopping centre, and the whole place is overcome by his presence. So, he is omniscient. He knows what's going on with everybody. He's not very nice. He's got kind of a catty kind of tone to him. He was a lot of fun to write.
Now, you have a whole cast of characters, though. I mean, main character that we get introduced to in chapter one is Shell or Michelle.
Yeah.
Shell for short. And then we meet the florist.
And then we meet Nev, the florist. So Shell is at a big changing point in her life. Her relationship has just ended. She's just moved home. She's in her early 30s and she has lost her job. And she goes to seek work in the shopping centre and comes upon a very beautiful florist whose name is Nev, who is already entangled in a complicated situation with a plant that Shell finds herself increasingly involved in as the story goes on.
And it takes a while for us to realise just what the monster can be up to.
Exactly. And I think that burying secrets in the heart of the story was one of the great joys of writing it. I always knew what he was going to do and I always knew how things were going to end.
But you let us in on this quite
very
gradually.
Drip. Yes.
Yeah, and it becomes more horrific as we go.
As it goes along. It starts very normal, yeah.
How do you like it described? I mean, do you like it described as gothic?
I think certainly that the gothic would be a really good way of looking at it. A lot of the literature that I've loved growing up is gothic, and it in the way that it takes an ordinary place like a house or like a school and makes it strange, looks at it from a different angle. And for me, the shopping centre is somewhere that I've spent whole chunks of my life, both as a teenager, working there in my adult life, and taking that place and making it a little strange, looking a little closely at it. That to me is gothic. So, yes, I would absolutely take it as a gothic novel.
I mean, when you're walking through a shopping centre, you don't feel that the eyes of some monster are upon you. So it's the normal being transformed in some way into, you know, something else, something other.
That's my hope. And the way that I look at it is when you walk through the shopping centres that remain in Dublin, there are a lot of shadowy corners. There are a lot of empty units. There's a lot of desolation in plain view. There might be a large, vibrant shopping centre after a row of five or six empty shops. So I guess the invitation in the book is to look closely at the places that you see every day and see if there's anything curious hiding just beyond the frame of vision, you know?
Now, at the same time, you've embraced shopping centres. I mean,
I love them.
I saw you talking to one interviewer about how convenient they are for certain activities. As a new mother, for example, it's raining outside, the child won't go to sleep. Normally what you do is you go up and down the road or go to the local park and walk and walk and walk until the child finally falls asleep.
Sounds familiar.
Sometimes you can't do it.
You can't do it, yes. And for me, during my child was born in the winter, and during the period of my husband's paternity leave, we in the evenings would drive out to Liffey Valley, which is huge and long. And at the very end of the day, when it was quiet, we would walk up and down the long corridor of Liffey Valley. And very recently, we were there again on a busier day. And my baby's a little bit bigger now. And we passed another couple with the newest baby I had ever seen, doing the very same walk. And I stopped and I said, congratulations to the new mother, and had this moment of, my goodness, it wasn't just us. There are so many other people in our position who use these spaces, which are designed to, you know, go buy your clothes and your groceries, but they're used for other big moments in your life as well. You know, they're important places, I think.
Well, they tend to be dry.
Yes, they're dry.
They tend
to be
warm.
There are bathrooms and often a place to get a cup of tea, which is very important.
Yeah. Now, the other thing is how teenagers use the shopping malls. I mean, most people, you probably did in your youth, besides working in them, you probably hung out in them.
I did. One of the great first responsibilities that I was allowed at kind of 11 years old was the march from my housing estate all the way over to Dunamead Shopping Centre with my girlfriends, and we would go up to the tiny stationery shop to buy a couple of like gel pens, and it was our Saturday afternoon. It was a very important kind of pilgrimage for us to take at the time, and it was just going to the shops. But you can take going to the shops as nothing, or you can take it as a really special punctuation mark in the way that we live our lives, you know?
Yeah, now you're a relatively young author. I don't know exactly how long you've been doing this, but you're a woman of many parts. You review video games as well.
I do, yes. My moonlight as a video game critic at The Guardian. I've been playing video games since I was a child myself, and I always knew I wasn't wasting my time. So I cover indie games as a critic over at The Guardian, which is a really a delightful job that I kind of can't believe I get to do. You know,
so you're doing all of this, but you are fundamentally a poet, and your prose reflects that facility of language, I think.
Thank
that you.
Have. Yes. Yeah.
A modern day poet. How would you make a crusted poetry? Do you have to write gothic romance in order to keep the lights on?
I started in poetry, and when I was in my 20s, you couldn't have told me not to be a writer. I was so hungry for it, and I would have tried any avenue in the world to get my words on a page in front of people. And one of the, at the time, easiest ways was to go to spoken word evenings, get up on a stage in front of a room full of strangers and read my poems. It was a very quick way to work out whether the work was good or bad, because the room would let you know. And it was through poetry and through the experience of reading spoken word and performing spoken word, both here and in America, that I discovered and learned more and more about like what art I want to put in the world. So the books are a natural progression from the poems.
Yeah. How did you get published for the first time?
Oh my goodness, when I was living in California, I was writing about my experience of living in the States for the Irish Times. This was back in 2012, and I was writing about how strange it was to be living in the States. And New Ireland Press put together a collection of my nonfiction about living in America. And that was my first book, which was in 2013. And it was from there that I started to write fiction.
So that was California in 2013. And we know from the current governor that things are not as easy as they would have been in 2013.
I mean, at the time, it felt both like a very hard place to live and also like a place of absolute possibility. And I go back regularly because I worked in a bookshop there. I still have amazing friends who live there. But the way things have changed is hard on the heart. Hard on the heart.
Yeah. The other thing that you reflect upon is how there might be the demise of retail and the shopping mall because of the online marketeers who are flogging you everything. It used to be only books with Amazon, and now Amazon will sell you everything.
Everything. You're absolutely right. I do love the internet. I think the internet is a marvel, and it's incredible that we have it. But I also every day feel like I'm witnessing what it's eroding in the world that we live in. And especially when you go into shopping centres, you can see this. So in the novel...
It's like someone with gapped teeth.
Yes,
there's a tooth
missing. Exactly. Things are
knocked out. The dry cleaners is gone. The bookshop is gone. The cobbler is gone.
Little by little, things are falling apart. But there are shops and services that remain. And in it, the ones you love, the characters work in shops that can't be replaced.
But the demise is hanging over them. I mean, this shopping centre, your fictional shopping centre, it needs to be either knocked down, as you put it, to make way for a 6-story apartment building, not for a new shopping centre, not for a refurbed version of itself, but rather something that will not really add much to the community.
Exactly. And I worry that this is the long-term fate of many of the shopping centres that we have that contain hairdressers, that contain supermarkets, things that people require. People want to go to shops. I don't believe that we want all of our services handed to us on the internet. I think it's very important to walk to the post office. I think it's very important to go into the world and experience ordinary little boring tasks and to meet people along the way. And the internet would convenience you into a very quiet, lonely life, I think.
Absolutely. I mean, that's why I suppose the modern shopping centre is more about entertainment. I mean, there are cinemas there are coffee shops, there are places for lunch, there are things you can do.
Yes, and that keeps people moving. And even in the emptiest shopping centres, there will still always be a steady footfall of people. You'll find yourself walking through the quieter corridors of the Omni, and there will still be mams, there'll still be grandmothers, there'll still be people moving around, because we want to live out in the world and not in our screens, I believe.
Well, the book is fabulous. Deliciously Strange, Delightfully Wicked is one review that's on the cover of the book. Eat the Ones You Love, it is called. It's available everywhere and it's already massively successful, I presume, because your reviews are absolutely five star.
Thank you so much, Pat.
Sarah Maria Griffin, thank you very much for joining us.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.